Gigi and your colleagues from the Department of Social Development and SASA. Honourable members, you now have an opportunity to ask questions. Can I take a few hands? Thank you. Honourable Makuba, we'll go down the line. Honourable Makuba, we'll start with you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation by the department. I just want to find out, according to the report, that only the older persons and the child support grants increased in the number of recipients. The other grants are showing a decline. I just wanted to know if the department knows exactly the reason for the decline in the recipients of all other grants, and if they do have a plan of action to remedy the situation. And also on the report, we were given a briefing about the appeals and the appeals that have been attended to and like finalized, but I just wanted to know what is the current backlog to date. The last one is on the, we went to the Substance Abuse Summit earlier this year. I just wanted to know if the department is seeing any improvement as far as the abuse of substance and all that after the summit that we had. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Makuba. Honourable Makupane.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for the department for their presentation. I know they are feeling very bad to have a qualified opinion because it's an indication of a poor financial control. But anyway, you are working so hard to improve the situation. My question based on that is, what is the department exactly doing to ensure that this dual accountability relationship does not compromise the integrity of the department? Because this question we have asked it last year, and we promised that the department is having a consultation with SASA. What was the outcome of that consultation that you had with SASA? My second question, Chair, is regarding the Central Drug Authority. They tabled their annual report of 2010 in 2011. And what is the reason? And will this trend continue again in 2011? That's what I wanted to know. They have not yet, yes, sorry. My other question, Chair, is regarding the Children's Act. What are the challenges that the province are facing regarding the implementation of the Children's Act, and how is the department is doing to monitor the implementation of Children's Act? And based on that again, Chair, what are also challenges that have been identified by the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development in implementing the Children's Act? Because it's not only the department alone. And my other question, Chair, is regarding the, in terms of finance, there's a understanding because many programs, because of there's an understanding because of vacant positions that are not filled. We just wanted to find that the department can maybe explain whether those vacant posts, are they funded post by post? If they are funded post, the department can just give us a plan. How are they going to address the filling of those posts, and also give us the timeline? And this maybe the department remember very well. During the soon address, the president has called that all the departments should have filled the vacant posts by June 2011. So which means if we are still having these vacant posts that are funded, which means we are not complying with the call of the president. And the other thing, Chair, is regarding the slow spending on social assistance grant. The reason being that there is a low intake that was not anticipated. But I just wanted to find out from the department, do they know exactly how many people who are not receiving the grant, who qualify to receive the grants but are not receiving the grants? And secondly, what is the plan to fill the gap of people who qualify for the grants but do not access the grants? My last question, Chair, is regarding let me talk about the department has spent that 1.1% on compensation of employees, which is 7.1% above the 25% of quarterly benchmark. The department, can they maybe explain the factors that contributed to this high level of expenditure so that we can know what is happening? The other last person around, now is the last one. There's a delay in transferring funds to Love Life and other non-governmental organizations. So I just, if maybe the department can just explain to us why was the delay in transferring the funds to the other NGOs? Because as we are all seated here, we know that the NGOs, they are rendering service, they use service on behalf of government. Why were they not paid? Why there was a delay in transferring their funds? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member Kopane. I just want to bring members' attention to the following matter. We are discussing the annual report of Department of Social Development. And for the year under review, it's the 1st of March 2010, 1st of April 2010 to 31st of March 2011, right? And not the 1st of March 2010 to 31st of April 2011. So can we please confine our questions to the year under review, which means that year, 31st of March 2010 to the first, from the 1st of April 2010 to the 31st of March 2011. Yeah, this is not right. You made a mistake and you've also confused the chair in the process. So that's the Department of Social Development. So can we confine our questions to that? So especially on appeals, Honourable Member Makuba, it's going to be unfair that he wasn't to say what is the current one, because you have to refer to the one, to the current appeals number for that ended 31st of March 2011. Can we make that agreement that the department can make those figures available to you? Yeah. And then yes, I think that was the only question, but can the other members just note that you confine your questions to the year under review, please? Honourable Member Porter, and then Honourable Member Mafolo will follow.
Thank you for the department for the presentation. I would just like to know what are the implications of not finalizing and implementing the harmonized assessment tool? And then the other one is, what is the progress of a green paper on the family? And the other one is, what are the plans and timeframes of the social relief bill?
Thank you very much, Honourable Member Mafolo. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and let me welcome the presentation too. My question is on slide number 15, appointment and secured offices for staff in the mentioned provinces. I don't know if KZN is an error that is not there, because all 8 provinces are there. I don't see KZN. And then another question is on slide number 29. You have implemented aftercare and reintegration model in Western Cape and Mpumalanga provinces. Are you going to expand it to other provinces too?
And then the last issue is, you have given us the stats and the back, how did you deal with the backlogs of appeals? What are the specific issues related to the appeals? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member Mafolo, Honourable Member Tsweta.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Chair. I also want to thank the department for the presentation. I just want to make a follow-up to a question asked by Honourable Member from the ID. I know that there were processes done towards the assessment of the draft of Social Assistance Amendment Bill, and also the public hearings were done towards the harmonized assessment tool. I just want to check how far are you with the implementation of the harmonized assessment tool. The second one is on slide 16. Slide 16 is talking about the students that are awarded the scholarship to register for social work, and also 1,177 social work students graduated and absorbed into employment. I just want to check to DG, because we've been along these years worried about shortage of social workers, and I'm a bit worried about retention strategies to make sure that these social workers that are given scholarship by the government or by social development are going to work for social development. What kind of strategies or retention strategies do you have around that? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honourable Member Tsweta, I've got a few questions. In terms of the social work students, the bursary fund has been in existence for quite some time, and it was established because there was a shortage, a grave shortage of social workers in the country. Now, in the annual report, it says that over 5,000 social workers have graduated because of the bursary program and have been and then found employment within the various sector departments. What impact has the bursary fund made in terms of addressing the shortage of social workers? Maybe the DDG can help me, whether it's one social worker per 850 or 1,000 of the population. But what impact has it made to address the chronic shortage of social workers in the country, and what are the new figures? Then I'm sure if you look at slide 48, it should be when it comes to program 5, under strategy and governance, I'm sure it says the report on the status of health, morbidity, mortality and development in South Africa into a single report. Should it be a report? And coming to the finances, I think the late tabling of the financial statements by SASSA last year, the fact that they received a disclaimer, and if you look at the financials now, it's a much better report. Although the department was qualified, so there has been a vast improvement. But
for SASSA to have moved from a disclaimer to an unqualified report. But there is still some work to be done. Can the DG tell us whether the work that has been done, the momentum will be kept up, and that it won't just be to get a clean audit report next year, but that it will become part of the operations of SASSA and of DSD, because it's also matters of emphasis relating to the Department of Social Development. Will those matters be addressed? Is there an audit response plan or audit action plan to address these shortcomings, and so that they can become part of the policies and the daily operations of the department? Because the purpose is also for the department through this exercise to become more efficient and effective in terms of delivering on its mandate. And then also strengthen governance within SASSA and within the Department of Social Development and its entities. That is my other question is we had a briefing by the Auditor General yesterday and which had quite a glowing report in terms of the progress that has been made. Now, will you ensure, and this, DG, we can link to my previous question, whether the consultants that were there in, I think in SASSA, and maybe even the CEO of SASSA can respond to that. Since they've done such a good job, because if SASSA does a good job, it reflects on you. Whether will there be a skills transfer? I think the AG said there was, it was a Deloitte, not Deloitte, Ernst & Young, yeah. Whether Ernst & Young will embark on a skills transfer process so that when they leave, the good work can continue. Yes. Let me stop there and then give the department an opportunity to respond.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. A sizable number of very important questions has been raised. I will deal with some and still give my other colleagues the opportunity to respond. Let me perhaps start with the questions you raised last, Madam Chair. Perhaps the CEO of SASSA will speak more intelligibly about what skills transfer programs have been built into the relationship they have with the consultants currently on site. But rather, I should deal with the questions relating to the improvements that we have seen happen at SASSA, which have in fact improved the picture of our financial accountability with regards to the social grants money. Indeed, Chairperson, the improvements that are there are now being built into the systems of SASSA, because this is not only a short-term intervention. It's going to be a long-term intervention, and in fact a permanent feature of how SASSA does its work. The employment of additional people in certain instances to go into the registry, to clear the files, to make sure that the correspondence is properly filed in the document, in the files, beneficiary files. That is going to form part of standard procedures within SASSA. And that is what we've agreed upon would happen, Madam Chair. And from our side, we will continue to engage very closely with SASA to make sure that we cement our relationship, we look beyond just the personal rapport between the CEO and the DG, but in fact build this relationship into systems of the two organizations. We have actually moved to a point where the work that SASA does in relation to the grants money doesn't only get dealt with by the audit committee of the department, because that money is on our financial statement, but that the audit committee of SASA has also taken it upon itself to deal with those matters. And we've also agreed that the two audit committees will meet to make sure that they compare notes and make sure that there is monitoring from both sides. I'm happy to say, Chairperson, that owing largely to the good nature of the CEO of SASA, we've made significant progress, but that alone would not be enough if we don't actually build it into the systems that we have. And we have begun to build that into the kind of protocols that we have in how we relate with SASA. This perhaps is related to the question that Honourable Member Kopane raised about whether the issue of dual accountability, because this revolves around the flow of funds and what is called dual accountability. We have engaged with SASA and in fact continue to engage with them on this, but the real devil doesn't have much to do with any amount of consultation between ourselves and SASA on this, other than in relation to, of course, the us understanding each other on how we exercise our oversight. The real issue on accountability relates to the flow of funds that the Treasury has determined that whilst the administrative budget of SASA will be transferred over to SASA so that the CEO of SASA is fully accountable for it, they still have not changed their view as yet on whether the money that is called the transfer to households will also be allowed for transfer to SASA. At this stage, the National Treasury, whilst it is aware of the challenges that the flow of funds presents for the Department of Social Development, until such time that they find a solution to that configuration, it looks like that money will still remain with us. And I think members of the committee have observed this. But what we are doing is improving our continued engagement with SASA with regards to allowing us access into SOCPEN so we are able to do exception reports. We've also agreed that we will expand the scope of our internal audit. Strictly speaking, internal audit is exactly that, internal. It looks internal to the department. But seeing that the operations of SASA in relation to administration of grants impact on our financials, we have agreed with SASA that the scope of the audit plan of our internal audit will extend to SASA offices, which means that our internal auditors would also go out to SASA offices to do spot checks to see whether the files are in order, so that we don't only rely on SASA's internal audit giving us reports on what is the state of affairs. But that would be a collaborative effort. We wouldn't encourage a situation where our internal audit is seen as trying to work against the internal audit of SASA, but that we're going to try and make sure that they work hand in hand. And that is certainly part of the plan that we have at the moment. We've also laid emphasis on what is called implementation support, meaning that our role in relation to matters of policy will not stop only at the point where we've changed our policy and simply expect SASA to implement. We have agreed that we will in fact introduce systems and guidelines that will enable a uniform interpretation of what is the policy across all offices of SASA in the country, with a view to ensuring that there are no discrepancies in how the law is understood and in fact implemented by various officials of SASA. And we believe that this is part of the solution we need. We've also agreed, I participated in the strategic planning session of SASA, where I spoke of the need for both SASA and the department to engage on matters of policy, meaning that while SASA is an administrative body responsible for the management and administration of grants, we also believe that there is a lot that they amass at the coalface of implementation of policy that is important to better inform how we think about our policies so that they are better fine-tuned to respond to the conditions on the ground. And we believe that these will impact positively on not only on the relationships, but also on the level of success by SASA in making sure that the files are properly kept, that the officials at the right level within SASA are employed to deal with applications and make sure that the documentation of those files is in order at all times. At this point, Madam Chair, if you will permit, I would like to ask my other colleagues to deal with the other questions, and then I will continue to tick the questions that they're dealing with, and then I will come back and deal with those that they would have left out by then. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. There were a number of questions in relation to welfare services. The first one was the anti-substance abuse biennial summit, whether we have seen any impact as far as substance abuse is concerned after that summit. I think it's too early to tell. What we have done, we have developed a program of action, an intersectoral program of action, which was approved by Cabinet almost 2 weeks ago. And that program of action indicates what the responsibility of each department in terms of measures that have to be taken or improved to deal with substance abuse, especially alcohol abuse. The program of action also has a monitoring and evaluation. We have to develop a monitoring and evaluation system. So on a regular basis, we'll be able to tell whether there is an improvement or not. Only after those measures, some of the measures have been put in place. For example, the legislation that has to be consolidated. If you look at the licensing of the liquor outlet, you find that every province has got its own, or every municipality has got its own legislation. So there's a need of harmonizing all these pieces of legislation. There's still a lot of work to do. I'm not sure if the portfolio committee has seen the program of action. Maybe we'll have to make it available to you, Chair. With regard to the Central Drug Authority, it is true that the report was late last year and it's also going to be late this year. The main problem is that we get reports from the department because the department does are responsible for intervening as far as substance abuse is concerned in accordance to the Central Drug Authority, are sending their reports to the department quite late. the main reason being that they only sent us the information after they finalized their annual report. But the Central Drug Authority report has to be in by June. So there's a problem there with the alignment of the report, the annual reports that need to be submitted to Parliament. And because what we are thinking is that with the new Central Drug Authority, we need to, and the legislation, the submission of the Central Drug Authority should be the same time as the submission of the annual report of the department to Parliament. There was a question with regards to what are the challenges that the provinces are facing as far as the implementation of the Children's Act. The main challenge that we are facing now is with regards to the foster care placement. The provinces are facing, have a problem with that together with the Department of Justice. This is with regards to the extension orders. After the child has been placed in foster care, after 2 years, we need to review the order. In the past, it was done administratively in accordance to the Child Care Act of 1983. It will be done administratively by the Department of Social Development Concern, the provincial department. But now the new act has a provision which makes it compulsory for the order to be extended by the children's court, not by the provincial department. So we have a backlog with regard to that, but there was a provision that has been made by the Northern Gauteng High Court, which has provided an order which has given us an opportunity to deal with the backlog or not to disadvantage the children, let me say, who are in foster care, because all the children who are in foster care from 2009 to 2010 June, their orders are regarded as having been extended in accordance to the High Court. So we, at the moment, we are dealing with the court orders that are lapsing now from June onwards, and the numbers are manageable. We have a strategy in the department to deal with the backlog, and that strategy has also been approved by MINMEC and the HSD. Yesterday we were finalizing it with the Head of Social Development. With regard to the Child Protection Register, is another problem that we are facing because we are not, the Department of Justice is struggling to give us information on the people who've been convicted and found to be unsuitable to work with children. We're getting the convictions, but we are not getting the report which indicates that this person has been found unsuitable to work with children. We are working with that. The Department of Justice has now recently sent a circular to all the courts, especially the criminal courts, to find if the person is convicted of a crime against a child, they have to be found unsuitable to work with the children during the trial or after the trial. So there is an improvement there. Here we've reported that only one case was of a person was found unsuitable to work with children. The number has now increased to 18, but we hope that as time goes on during the course of the year, the situation will improve. The delay in transferring funds to NGOs, it was really a matter of the finalization of the service level agreement, information missing from the organization that needed to be put into the service level agreement, and the compliance report as well, they tend to delay the transfer of funds to the NGOs. The policy that has been reviewed now, the policy on financial hours, is dealing with those issues that we are able to pick up on the program much earlier. And in fact, this year we've made an improvement. We started transferring, funds to the NGOs much earlier because we've got a new system. And the guidelines that have been developed has also helped to process
the transfers much earlier. The status of the green paper on families. The green paper has been approved by cabinet also 2 weeks ago, and during September we have now submitted it to the government printers for gazetting, for public comment. We're also planning a number of workshops throughout the country for, you know, to workshop so that we can have enough information for the development of the white paper on families. It's not a green paper on family, it's a green paper on families, because we are taking into consideration that we've got the different types of families in the country. The aftercare model, I didn't hear the question quite well, but as I just captured where the question the question related to the implementation of the aftercare model in two provinces and why not other provinces. This was an initial implementation because we could not do all the provinces in 1 year. So in this year, we are moving to other provinces as well. The specific issues, I think we will send that information because I don't have now on substance abuse and the, you know, the treatment of the aftercare treatment, the numbers. I'm sure that's what you're referring to. Yeah, with regard to the retention strategies to retain social workers, the OSD was one measure that has led to the retention of the social workers in the country, because their salaries have increased, you know. And since then we have not seen an exodus of social workers from the country, from our country to other countries. The department is also in the process of finalizing the rural allowance for social workers working in rural areas. We hope once that has been approved, we will see more social workers staying and working in rural areas. With regard to the bursary that has been in existence for some time, it is true, but what we have not done is do an evaluation as yet. We're planning to do this evaluation next financial year, just to look at the impact. But what we know is that the ratio of the one social worker per five is 5,000 population has decreased, because in the past it was quite large. One social worker would be responsible for quite a large number of people in the community level. But what has not decreased is the caseload, because the challenges are increasing. For example, the number of orphans and vulnerable children is increasing. So the caseload, for example, on foster care is higher than it should be. So we still need more social workers to deal with specific challenges. For example, issues of, you know, older persons, services to people with disabilities, and services to children. We still need to deal with those, and because due to poverty levels and other problems in the country, we need more social workers to deal with the problems. Okay, I think those are the responses to the questions.
Chairperson, if I may just embellish two points on the responses that Dr. Mabetta has just given, just to provide better clarity. People appearing before the criminal courts for offences involving, say, abuse or maltreatment of children, tend to face the criminal charge exclusively. And I think up to now, the courts have generally not succeeded in making a further inquiry, because it's not enough to find a person guilty of that offense. You have to make a further inquiry as to whether the guilty person is in fact unsuitable to work with children. And what we've been falling short of in the justice system is that further step of making a further inquiry to make that determination has not been done. So the fact that you can have conviction rates that are high, but if that finding, that further inquiry has not been made, we would not be allowed to place guilty people only on our register, which means a further step would need to be taken by the Department of Justice, which is exactly what they're doing now. So it doesn't mean that there aren't people who've been found guilty, who in fact, if an inquiry were to be made, would not be found to be unsuitable. It says that step has not been taken. So, and because it hasn't been taken, we are unable to register these people in the Child Protection Register. The other point relates to the green paper process, Madam Chair. It is certainly our intention that as part of the public consultation process, we will come to the committee in order to engage with the committee, because in fact the committee will also create a much better platform of engagement, because I'm sure the committee would invoke its muscle of creating that platform where we can actually even have oral presentations being made in the same way as we have with legislation. So we will be coming to the committee with a firm proposal as to how we envisage the committee assisting us. We hope that the committee, in its very busy schedule, would find the time to assist us in consolidating the public engagement on this. This is a very delicate matter, matters relating to families. So we would need to be very careful how we deal with this. And it has wider implications. This is not a social development specific matter. It cuts across the entirety of government. So we will certainly wish to take refuge in the portfolio committee's processes of making sure that there is more meaningful engagement at that level. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair and honourable members. There was two questions asked relating to the appeals. The first question related to the current backlog, or rather the number of cases as at the end of the year under review. The total number of cases that we had at the end of that year was over 19,000. Then there was a question relating to specifics, or maybe I should rather say, when you come and report relating for this year, in the next year, will then indicate how we dealt with the backlog, or unless the committee requests us to come and just give feedback, like it happened previously, we'll then come and give feedback on how are we faring relating to the current year. Then there was a question about what were the specific challenges relating to the appeals, also relating to the year under review. The main challenge really was that we had quite a number of matters where applications or appeals where there were no IDs. The applicants had not provided ID numbers, and as a result, it became difficult to verify whether or not, in fact, this was a genuine application for appeal or not, and it would then require that you must write to these people to at least get to go and check with SOCPEN whether or not they do exist. What also complicated this challenge was that some of the people who did not have ID numbers would also not have provided addresses, physical addresses, or where they had provided physical addresses, they would no longer be using those postal addresses, so we had difficulty in trying to trace them. But I must report that we've been at least successful in finding ways of dealing with these matters and getting some of them to respond to provide us with the ID numbers. Another challenge also related to the eligibility of the documents that were submitted. Like sometimes we find it very difficult to read what was written on the document, largely because some of the appeals were very old. Some of these letters were much old, over 4 years old or so. So you may find it was very difficult to read what was written there. But through the process of going back to SASSA and going to physically check some of the records, we were able to make sense of what was written in some of the documents. Another challenge related to the retrieval of records. Like I say, some of these records were very old. we would have to go back to SASSA and request them to go to their warehouses and look for matters. Some of these matters were more than 4 years old, and some of the matters were destroyed. And in terms, they were legally destroyed because in terms of the National Archiving Act, after a certain period of time, which when it has passed, you can actually destroy the documents. But those were the challenges, but I can indicate that we succeeded in dealing with these matters. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Jehoma, could you please step in?
Thanks, DG. Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Member. Two questions were raised in respect of the disability and the disability definition in the assessment, and came from two of the members. First, in respect of the disability definition, members will recall that the Department of Health did at the time of the committee considering the amendment to the Social Assistance Bill approached the committee and made a presentation in which they outlined four challenges, essentially. One, of course, related to the implications for people with chronic conditions who currently do get the grants, but that we know that the disability benefit is not really targeting, but that they indicated that the Department of Health would be working on a response to accommodate such people through a better primary health care system. Related to that, the department also pointed out the fact that more training is needed for doctors, and then thirdly, that they had a serious shortage of medical practitioners / doctors, and that they were going to embark on a benchmarking exercise to Brazil at which they will look at their primary health care system. And of course, we know from both their own reports as well as media reports that they had undertaken the visit to Brazil, and that we also know that in terms of the 10-point plan of the Minister of Health, a significant proportion of funds for the years going forward will be allocated to improve the health care system, as well as building infrastructure. So to a large degree, it would therefore still be necessary for us in the Department of Health to interact and to ask how we take this process forward. But what they are currently doing is only going to be part of the problem. The other element, of course, that we need to deal with, and we hope to come back to the committee soon, is to proceed with the proposed definition and the amendment of the bill. While that consideration, of course, will be brought to the committee, we have proceeded where possible to improve the assessment of disability through the training of medical doctors. So it's not as if the doors are left wide open for people without disability to enter the system, but clarity, of course, would still be needed for this committee in order to continue with the passing of the bill. So we hope to do that before the end of this financial year, and put that matter to rest. The other issue raised is in respect of the Social Relief of Distress Bill. We must acknowledge it has taken longer than we had envisaged initially, and maybe because we were somewhat ambitious, we were hoping to come to the committee with the bill, but before that, it took quite a period of consultation just at the provincial level. But what is necessary now in what is being proposed is that the responsibility for social relief provision shifts from SASSA to the provincial departments of social development. Now, these provincial departments do not have the necessary IT infrastructure as well as dedicated staff. So we started the consultation process right at the bottom to make people aware of it, and of course that took a bit of time. In between, of course, we've had a change in administration, and it was therefore then necessary post-2009 to have the MINMEC and new heads of departments look afresh at it. And of course we know that they had hardly looked at it. Then we had again last year a change, and both again in terms of political leadership and heads of departments. So again, we held it back to make sure that everyone is on board. What we can inform the committee that all the departments that will be affected, because we're talking about a bill that rests within social development but provides for relief funds that in part ought to be provided by the Department of Defense, Department of Home Affairs. We're talking about four funds located in four different departments, and the implications therefore are quite significant. All these departments have now agreed to us proceeding with the bill. Our last interaction was with the National Treasury to look at, while provincial departments look at infrastructure, IT, and human resources, that we perhaps proceed with a conditional grant as a transitional measure so that we can fast-track the, call it in inverted commas, the devolution of the function to provinces. Again, there we can assure the committee that it's a matter that we will conclude before the end of this financial year. Thank you, Chair.
So there was a matter relating to the reasons for the decline in the take-up of social grants.
So. Regrettably, I'm not sure I heard that question correct. But was the question a reason for the decline in the numbers in growth rates? I think there are two reasons, perhaps, that one can argue why it's happening. One is, we have seen a tapering off in the growth numbers, which is not quite unexpected. In most countries where, even where means tests exist and all grants are universal, the take-up rate seems to taper off at 75%. Now, for most of the grants, the older persons, we've reached 75% take-up rate quite earlier. For the children in all of the age cohorts, except for children under 3 years, we've begun to see a tapering off. And now that we've got to the higher age cohort, it would appear that people are, because access to it is self-selecting, although we must acknowledge certain constraints, but this is not an unexpected phenomenon. So there's been that decline, and I think going forward, in spite of the fact that we've been budgeting, of course, in consultation with SASA and Treasury for higher take-up rates, there seems to be this natural tapering off of it. So going forward, we don't expect a lot of growth to happen. Hence, this argument of affordability and sustainability of the system, we always felt is a bit of a detraction of it. And the share of social grants as a proportion of GDP will continue to decline going forward. Of course, the other issue is the better fraud prevention, detection measures that have been implemented by SASA, and I'm sure SASA will speak to it, but the continuous putting up of systems, prosecuting people, is definitely playing a role, along with SASA's energy that they put into reviewing of grants, both disability and others for life certificates, on a much more regular basis. In fact, SASA has over the last 2 years had this function called this maintenance of grants, which is a necessary thing, and that too contributes to making sure that the leakage is declined and hence we see bearing the fruit thereof. Thank you.
Chairperson, there was another question on grants. It was prefixed by what is called the low, slow spending on social grants. But the real question was, how many people qualify for grants that are not on the system? It's very difficult to tell how many people out there may qualify for grants but are not on the system, because there are a number of things that they have to, kind of requirements that they need to meet before we can say that they actually do qualify or not. I'm not talking about the other grant types. But a recent study which was done by the Financial and Fiscal Commission and UNICEF has suggested that there's an estimated 2 million children, for an example, who probably qualify for the child support grant but are not yet on the system. And we believe that some of those children are to be found in farming communities, for an example, where people who live and work on farms are generally not allowed by their employers to go out and apply for grants on behalf of their children. Because part of the information they would have to declare is their own income, which generally tends to be very low. And the farmers don't want that information to be known. We will be embarking on a campaign assisted by the Department of Labor to make sure that the farmers open their farms for SASA officials and social development officials to get onto those farms and find these children, because we know that the bulk of them must be found there. But there may well be other children in other places who don't come forward either because they don't have the necessary documentation and they don't know that there are other alternative ways that can be utilized for them to qualify for grants. We can't say exactly. I know the question was, do we know exactly how many? It's very difficult to tell exactly. But we concede that there are other people out there in the community, the numbers of whom are not very certain, who qualify for grants, but have still not come forward to take full advantage of that. Mr. Webster? Oh, do you want to
quickly, in part, I missed the direct question, but yes, concurrence from the people doing most of the statistical analysis, that is difficult, but we can commit to give the committee what we call we do micro simulation in which we compare incomes of people and therefore on the basis of that say whether they qualify. But again, these should not be read as exact numbers, but it has helped us in the past to target it. So we will provide it per province, per grant type, and say these are the people that we think ought to qualify. Whether of course they will come forward is another matter. Yeah.
Okay. We will come back to some of the aspects of social security. Mr. Webster?
Thank you, DG. Chairperson, honourable members, we do have a plan for the filling of the vacant post in the department establishment. All vacancies on the establishment are funded. We have timelines for the filling of these posts. The target is to fill a vacancy within 3 months from when it occurs. For the public service, the DPSA has issued a guideline that it should happen within 4 months or so. The public service target is also, vacancy rate target is 10% that we must work towards. We are currently below that target, standing at 9%, or just under 9. But there is definitely that plan to fill it within 3 months. Because of the department's realignment process that's currently underway, some of the top management posts, such as the DDGs, have been held in abeyance. But now that Manco has agreed in principle to the high-level realigned structure, the minister will consider a proposal later this month or early next month. We are waiting for a date to brief her. If everything goes according to plan, Chairperson, at least the top management posts would be filled in the current financial year. But that is what we are aiming for. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Madam Chair, there were just one or two other questions that perhaps I should mop up quickly. perhaps I should correct the question to start with. We don't as yet have 5,000 plus graduates who have come through the scholarship program. But we have just over 5,000 students within the system who are on the scholarship program. The recent figures of graduates, just in the last financial year, were about 1,017 or thereabouts. But if we want the total number of graduates over time, we can make those numbers available. I don't know if Dr. Mabetra has got the numbers. Yes. Of course, part of the question was, what has been the impact of of these graduates. And part of the question was, have these graduates in fact been placed? And the answer is yes. These graduates have been placed by provincial departments of social development, and in exceptional circumstances, some of these graduates have been placed in non-governmental organizations. So the impact has been rather small, in that the magnitude of the challenge and the gap in the numbers of social workers that we need remains very high, and in fact the social challenges continue to increase, which means that we are having fewer graduates coming into the system relative to the rate of expansion of the social challenges that we are having. But there are good signs that the social workers that are coming into the system are providing an extension to the reach of government services to many people who hitherto were unable to do so. The final point, which relates to Honorable Makoba's question on the reasons for the decline in the other grant types, I think the reasons for the decline have been answered, but the question presupposes that there has been an increase in child support grant and old age grant, but we haven't seen an equal increase in the other grant types. What we need to be reminded of is the fact that in the case of the child support grant and the old age grant, there were deliberate policy interventions of late. We had age equalization on the side of the old age grant, which now accounts for more people coming into the system because the age requirement has been reduced in the case of men. In the case of children, we've been extending the age of eligibility for the child support grant. Chances are that if we had if the status quo had remained the same, meaning the older men receiving the grant at the age of 65 and children only qualifying up to the age of 14, we would probably see a decline in the case of those two grant types as well. But what we're seeing is that there is that take-up rate, which is the direct result of the policy interventions that have been made in recent times. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, teachers and team. Honourable Mafolo, you indicated that you wanted to ask a follow-up question. I see Honourable Makuba also looking at me.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I just wanted to add on that one of us. I think the ID and the address can't make a person, because that is the requirement. First thing when the... I don't know if is it the question of SASA or is it based on you. Because ID and the first official to receive the documents must see that there's no ID, there's no address, that application should go back. It's unnecessary for it to go for those reasons there. I thought you would give me some reasons, although I understand that from the 16th of September to 2010, all the applications are going back to SASA, but I wanted to know previously from your experience as a department who were receiving appeals by that time, what were the specific issues for appeals. Chairperson, I just want to know about the expanded public works program, the minimum wage for them, how much did you pay more or less for them? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is regarding is in line with the findings of the Auditor General, especially the Treasury regulations, where you were saying that the investigation to irregular expenditure and fraudulent expenditure were not done within 30 days. Maybe you can explain to us. And secondly, is regarding the irregular expenditure not being reported to the National Treasury. What was the reason behind that?
The other one, Chair, is regarding the National Treasury that has approved that the removal of the ministers. We really appreciate, though it is going to be done in phased and gradually. Is there any time frame regarding that? Possibly when is it going to happen? The last one, Chair, is regarding some targets that were not met. I just wanted to find out, maybe the department sometimes is not realistic when they set targets in terms of what they are capable of doing. Maybe they have to re-look into that, because it appears as if you are failing to do what you expected to do, but there is, maybe you are not realistic when you put those targets. Thank you.
Could you please respond to those questions?
I think that the one for targets cannot be entirely mine, but I do take part of the blame. I suppose it's a combination of over-ambition in part, but in other areas we cannot always foresee the complicated nature of the policy process, even though many of us have many years of experience. All policies go through departments, institutions, etc. But I think on my part, and that DG will probably be more elaborate on it, is that we, and the Auditor General's issues also raised, it's been a learning process for us all to be able to set more realistic targets as we learn in the process of how things work in government. On the issue of the removal of the means test, there are trade-offs to be made, and hence it not even the Treasury want to commit to it. What we do know is that we've raised the means test for the old age grant as a first step last year by 10,000 rand. There hasn't been much of an impact or increased take up, and I think it engenders some confidence that maybe we can move forward. But effectively, the old age one is a matter of 3 to 4 years. For the child support grant and the others, we're looking at probably 9 to 10 years, barring that any other new policy step in that may require government resources on an equal basis as the social grants.
Thank you, honourable members. Maybe I should just clarify the issue of irregular expenditure and how it's required to be handled in terms of the PFMA. The department has processes that are set up in line with the requirements of the Act, which requires that it must have systems to identify irregular expenditure from the normal expenditure of the department. The Treasury guidelines require, therefore, that you disallow that expenditure, and for purposes of either you recover it from the officials or you write it off, depending on the circumstances. Now, before you do that, you then have to do investigation to determine whether indeed that expenditure is either irregular, fruitless, and wasteful, as defined in the Act. Now, only when the accounting officer has determined that expenditure is irregular, then he has a responsibility immediately to report it to the Treasury as well as the Auditor General. And then also each year must submit a report on the progress in terms of the cases of financial misconduct to the Public Service Commission. Now, in our instance, what the auditor had a gripe with was the fact that that process is slow, firstly, to investigate those matters that are already listed in the irregular expenditure register, and also to finalize those matters. It's only after you finalize your report to Treasury. I don't think the issue, in fact, was not the fact that the accounting officer has not reported, the fact that he has not finalized them in time. So I just wanted to clarify, Honourable Member, so that it's not really a transgression in terms of the PFMA. It's more about our own systems are slow. That is where I was reporting that we have put up measures now to improve, firstly to address the backlogs, and also to ensure that those that arise in this financial year are also dealt with within a maximum period of, I think we've set a standard of 2 months, which is 60 days. Thanks.
Thank you very much. No questions. Members still want to ask questions. The time now is quarter to.
Madam Acting Chair,
okay.
There were two other questions. the one relating to the stipend for expanded public works. I know the Honourable Member talked about salaries. We pay stipends on average 65 rand a day. When properly calculated, depending on the NQF level of the training that people are part of, it averages about 1,200 rand or thereabouts. Honourable Member Kopani talked about targets, and Mr. Satraya would like to comment on that briefly.
Okay, thanks, Chair, and the DG. The issue of targets, we definitely acknowledge it's a challenge that we continue to face, but the department is doing its best to strengthen the area of generally formulating outputs, indicators, and proper targets. We're addressing this by, you know, looking at the number of interventions. For instance, we have regular training at the technical level of managers on how to handle this in line with the framework for performance information in government in general. But also we have executive coaching at the executive level to begin to deal with this kinds of issues. But also M&E and strategy unit are, you know, providing technical support hands-on to the managers to begin to address these issues. We're looking at setting targets that are more realistic based on the human resources available, based on the financial resources available, but also we're beginning to delve down into issues of prevalence information, targets that are informed by research on the ground.
DG, are you done?
Yes, Madam Acting Chair, we are done at this point.
Thank you very much, DG. I see you still want to say something?
No, Madam Chair, I'm looking at the Honourable Member looking at me. I think she expected me to respond to the matter relating to appeals. I think the Member was saying the explanation relating to the IDs. She was not necessarily happy about it, but I think maybe it's important for me to just give a brief background. What had happened before the establishment of the independent tribunal was that the appeals were handled by provinces. So as at the time when the minister appointed an independent tribunal, we had over 60,000 matters. So they had to be collected and brought to one central point. And at that stage, when we started the process of sifting through those documents, we then realized that some of them had no ID numbers. That is why I was explaining the fact that once we start looking at them, we then realize that there were no ID numbers. That is why I was raising it as what was the challenge, in addition to what I have already indicated. Thank you, Madam Chair.
If I was to provide perhaps further clarity for the Honourable Member's comfort, a person applies for a grant at SASA. When their application is turned down, they don't take the file with them. That file remains at SASA. What they do is simply write a letter. So in that letter, they don't tell you what their ID number is. You have a letter, but you can't tell exactly who this person is. And that's what he's talking about. I know that the impression may be held that people then send the file to SASA, to the appeals tribunal, which must contain all that information that they used for their application in the first place, when in fact that's not how it works. SASA keeps the file, because the AG will come back and look for that file another day, especially if the grant application is successful. But a person gets informed that your application for a grant has not been successful for the following reasons. And at that time we didn't have forms that people must now complete to lodge an appeal. So people were simply generating a letter. and nothing prompted them to say, please give us your ID number. And in some instances, especially people who live in the villages, they give an address that is not verifiable. It could be the local school or the local shop, post box and the like. It's very difficult that even when you want to make a follow-up to actually say exactly who these people are and where they are to be found. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm now handing over to the Chair. Thank you very much. Now, thank you very much, DG. We've covered all the questions from the honourable members. DG, I think there's going to be, following from the report, there's going to be some engagement, like the issue of the green paper on families, and the other strategies that have been developed that the committee has not been briefed on. So I think we will, through the minister's parliamentary liaison officer, communicate with the minister on the policies that the committee has identified they would like to be briefed on, or strategies. And I think it's only fair that the committee also participate in the public participation process in the development of policy, and that as a department and the committee should then have that discussion on the way forward, especially with the green paper process. Yeah. But let me conclude, honourable members, to say that this has been a very interesting discussion. Let me congratulate the department on improvement in last year's report, especially on the financial side, but also in terms of the levels of commitment and the outcomes, although there is a few challenges as highlighted by the honourable members. We hope that has been taken into account. We will reflect on the report in our report to Parliament and resolve on certain matters. And then we would like to meet with you in future on your implementation, whether you've taken to heart what we have said in terms of recommendations to Parliament. So on that note, thank you very much, DG. We will resume, honourable members, at 2 o'clock. We're going to have lunch, and then we